The Treasury Salute, featuring Les Tremaine in a specially transcribed drama, Homeward Passage. And now the Treasury Salute, Homeward Passage.
This morning I got a letter from Joe, and I'm answering it right away. It's funny him asking me now how I felt going home. You don't forget things like that easily. Because it adds up to the way I felt later on, I've got to tell you about an evening on a bridge in England. Joe will remember that old stone bridge. October 1942, that was. A cool evening. Joe and I were leaning over the stone railing of the bridge, dropping pieces of wood into the water. We'd just drawn our battle equipment. In the morning, we were going to Africa.
Ah, it's nice here.
Yeah, just ducky.
Look how clear the water is.
It looks cold.
You know, Joe, this is beautiful country, all right?
So what?
I was just thinking about the day we came to England.
Me too. Ain't got anything else to think about?
No, seriously. When I saw the mountains and green grass, how quiet and peaceful everything seemed.
Oh, cut it out, will you? Look, there's a little spot on Broadway and 42nd Street, which maybe ain't got so much green stuff.
No green stuff at all, Joe.
Okay, but listen, if I ever get back, Phil, if I ever get back, so help me, I'm going to live, eat, sleep, love, and die right around that spot, so help me.
Typical New Yorker's view of America.
Okay, so I'm prejudiced. Do me something better.
Oh, not me. New York's my town, too. Most beautiful in the world, as far as I'm concerned.
What are you batting your gums about?
Nothing. I guess I just see New York as part of America, not the other way around. I guess I've never really seen America the way I do today. You too, Joe. All of us, I guess.
Yeah, I know what you mean, Phil. Now we sound like a couple of sloppy, homesick kids.
Yeah, I guess we do.
Oh, boy, what I'd give to see New York again.
I'd like to be walking down my street. Going home. Loneliness, someone once said, is such a common feeling that it need not be mentioned. But whoever said it was talking about loneliness in time of peace. In time of war, loneliness is a far different thing, more brutal, more violent. Loneliness in time of war is a rotten, unclean thing. It eats away at your insides. A tight, hard pain that just goes on through all your hours, waking and sleeping. And in time of war, loneliness is also something else. We used to say it was the first touch of homesickness. But we were wrong. I know that now. It was more than homesickness. It was the first awareness to a question, why must we fight? The way I feel today is a way I never felt before. Not in England and not even in Africa. In Africa, there were too many guys shooting at me. There was no time to think of anything else. All I knew was that I had to shoot them before they shot me.
They're hot today, Phil.
Yeah.
We may run into trouble.
It's okay. It's nothing new.
Get your mail?
Yeah. Three letters from my wife.
Go on, Tom. Duck, duck, duck!
They brought me far back afterwards. I was all shot up. I don't remember much about it, except the pain. They told me later I was in the hospital 6 months. I don't know. I had no idea of time. I didn't care much. They said it was a miracle that I pulled through. One day, the doctor came to my bed.
Phil, I've got some news for you.
Good news, I hope.
You're through with the Army.
Through?
You're going home, Phil, back to the States. When you're able to walk again, you're going home.
Oh, what words like that can do for a guy.
I don't know how I kept from busting wide open, waiting for my legs to carry me again. But they did, in time. And in more time, I was on a boat, and then the feeling began to get worse. At night, I'd lie on my bunk and imagine all sorts of ways to let my wife and folks know that I'd come home. I hadn't written them. I thought of surprising them, walking right into the house and saying nonchalantly, "Good evening," as though I'd just come back from an overnight trip. Then I thought of phoning and making believe I was calling from Africa. It was crazy. But it passed the time. On the 11th day, I saw land. It seemed to take 100 years for the boat to dock. It wasn't then like it is today. There were no people to greet us, no bands, not even the Red Cross to hand out coffee and donuts. But that was okay. It was enough just to see New York, just to feel that I was home. We finally got off the boat and had to wait around a while for transportation. And it was then I got a chance to call my wife. I found a phone booth, and I was trembling as I put a nickel in the slot. I looked out at the people passing outside the booth, not really seeing them. You don't have a date tonight, do you?
I beg your pardon?
I'd like to see you if you haven't.
What number do you want?
I got the right number.
Well, who is this?
Now, don't get excited.
Who is this?
Please, don't get excited.
Oh.
Now, don't get excited. Please, Ellen, please.
Phil?
Yes.
Oh,
crying out loud. Please don't cry. I didn't want you to cry. I didn't want you to get excited. Look, Ellen, please don't.
I'm not crying, dear. I'm not excited. Where are you?
New York.
When will you be home?
Tonight.
Tonight? How do you feel?
Fine.
Honestly?
Yes, yes, honestly.
Oh, my darling, I missed you so much. It's so good to hear your voice again.
You don't know how good it is to hear yours. I picked up a bus on 41st Street. There were mostly women in the bus. They looked so clean and warm. The sweet smell of perfume made me dizzy. Then the bus got underway. And as I sat among them, I don't know why, but all of a sudden I wanted to stand up and say to him, Look, I just got back from Africa. I left a lot of good guys there, and I got hurt badly. I want to tell you about it. I want you to listen to me. I got so much to say. But I didn't, of course. All I did was sit back and grip my hands tight and shut my eyes. Finally, we came to the outskirts of my town. I began to get nervous and jumpy. The bus turned down a back street, and I was glad I didn't want to meet anybody. All of a sudden, we were coming to my street. I got off the bus. I turned around and watched the bus move away. Then I remembered how quiet and still the whole world seemed to be. The night was cool. There was just a slight breeze in the air. I turned around.
The street I belonged to stretched out before me. I began to walk, slowly. I came to Mr. Eulinger's house. I could see him and his wife sitting in the living room. Across the street, somebody started to play a piano. And then far down the street, an open door shot light on the sidewalk from Mrs. Goldfarb's boarding house. And Mrs. Goldfarb began to call her red-headed daughter. It was as though I had never been away. Everything seemed the same. Then I was standing in front of my house. There was a light on in the living room. Through the window, I could see my mother, my father, my sister. Then I saw my wife. I began to cry. I'm not ashamed to admit it. I stood out there in front of my home crying. I don't know how long. Then I walked up the porch steps. I opened the door. I stepped into the living room. What do you say to people you haven't seen for so long? People you've thought about day after day in Africa, and during terrible quiet nights when you thought you'd go crazy. You figure out ways, things you would say to them when you see them. And then, when they're right there in front of you, you don't say anything. Then I saw her, my wife. She was standing in a far corner of the room. Her hand was at her throat. She stood very still, very quiet. She didn't say anything. She didn't smile. Color had gone from her cheeks. She didn't even cry. She just looked at me. And right there, I knew something. I knew then that these people, the fathers and mothers, the sisters and brothers and the wives and girlfriends, these people who wait for us, who love us, have more courage, more guts than we'll ever know. I knew then why we must fight. Not for big America, but for small America. The small America of our own street, our own home. And those friendly faces and friendly voices we can never forget. I went over to my wife, put my hands on her shoulders. We didn't have to speak. It was in her eyes. It was in my eyes. It was good to be home.
I stopped in the bank the other day. You see, I live in a small town, so I know everybody there. Maybe it was a coincidence, but the line of folks at the window where they sell U.S. savings bonds was longer than I'd ever seen it before. Later, I had a chance to talk to the teller. Yes, he said our people are buying U.S. savings bonds just as they did during the war, and it's a great habit. Guess our people realize that government bonds are the safest investment there is. So it looks as if everybody who's not on a regular payroll plan drops into the bank every Saturday morning and buys bonds. That's a great thing for Americans, and it's a great thing for America. The United States Treasury thanks Les Tremain and the other distinguished artists who appeared on this specially transcribed program. The Treasury salute was written by Sam Elkin and directed by Mark Goodson. The music was under the direction of Mark Warnow. This is Albert Groby speaking. Remember, buy United States savings bonds and hold them. They are an investment in the future, your country's future, and your future.